Okay, after having read Psalm 127, we might just notice that verse 1 teaches us that except the Lord does the building. This means that you and I are not capable of handling this situation by ourselves. It is the Lord who must build the home. Now, we admit that there are many good homes in the world of the unsaved. It doesn't go to say that because people are not Christians, that they don't have good homes, because there are many good, solid homes even among those who are not Christians. Sorry to say that sometimes the homes of those who are not Christians are better than the homes of those who are Christians. So let us not assume that because we are born-again believers, let us not assume that because we come to the Bible Truth Chapel that we've got it all made and we don't have any problems, or at least that we can't improve on. Now remember that the title for the month series is Family Enrichment, and we want to encourage you to think of it in that term, because if you think of it as a corrective type of a ministry, you may have a tendency to shy away from it and say, well, I don't want to be exposed to my problems. After all, we are cowardly, you know. And most of us don't like to look at our problems, especially when they become so glaring. And when we listen to someone like Brother Lowell bring out certain aspects of our marriage relationship, of our family discipline, and so forth, we may feel like we'd like to scoot right down under the seat. And we may feel rather ashamed of ourselves. Well, that's because we're cowardly. We don't really want to face the facts. But who of us here doesn't want to improve? Who of us here couldn't learn something to improve in our marriage relationships? Richard Baxter, a pastor of a denominational church many, many years ago, fell on his face before the Lord because he wasn't seeing the local church grow as it ought to. He just didn't seem to be able to see the Christians growing and the work prospering in a spiritual sense like he would like to. And he fell before the Lord in desperation. Lord, what can we do? And it was while he was on his knees before the Lord that the Lord spoke to him and said, Richard, you're working at this from the wrong end. Try the home. And from that point on, he began to concentrate on each home that made up the local church. He started visiting in the home. He started helping the Christians set up family altar or family worship or family devotion, whatever you want to call that. He got the Christians involved in having times when mom and dad and the children read and prayed together, showed them how to do it, and as a result of helping the home and getting the home situation improved upon, he saw tremendous blessing follow in the local church. And I'm still of the persuasion, on that authority and on all the other arguments that I see, that if we see our homes strengthened, if we see our marriage relationships improved upon, it's going to have a tremendous effect in our assembly right here. So it goes back to what we have said many times before. To have a good local church, you have to have good families making up that church. Because basically, with exceptions, basically a local church is made up of several families in any given community. But the makings of a family are the individuals in that family. So the local church will never rise higher than the families that make it up. But the families will never rise higher or be more spiritual than the individuals who make up that family. So where do we have to start? Well, basically, we have to start with premarital counseling. That's where we need to start. In fact, we even need to go back further than that. We need to go back all the way to the home life, to the children as they're growing up. Because a well-adjusted young person is going to be the result of a well-adjusted home life. Give me a young person who comes from a maladjusted home life, and I'll show you a person who is maladjusted. And maladjusted people usually have difficulty in choosing their partners and setting up their home patterns and functioning as good husbands and good wives and so forth. Okay, to say the least now, because the devil sees the impact that the Christian home can have in our society, He says, I don't like it. The devil is saying right now, I don't like what those Christians in Oskaloosa are doing. I don't like that attempt to try to improve the Christian home. I'm going to destroy it if I can. I'm going to do everything I can to hinder it. And he may even be doing that by working in our minds. The devil could be working in our minds right now saying, you know, I don't need that. I don't need that. Why, I know how to raise my kids all right. I've read a book or two, you know, on it. Okay, let us all remember that there's not one of us that can't improve on our situation. And that's what we are here for, is to try to improve. Not so much to correct, not so much to expose, but to improve upon it. So the devil says he doesn't like it, and the devil does not like the home, a good home, a Christian home, so he brings a lot of pressures against it. All right, we want to talk just a little bit this morning then about the pressures that are brought against the home. I didn't get time with snow shoveling this morning and with many things going this week. I didn't get time to get this down into a better form on the overhead projector, so it's pretty rough this morning. But let's talk just for a minute, and maybe you can even contribute something here as to what are some of the pressures that are brought against the home, particularly the Christian home today. And we're going to divide those pressures into two areas. There are the external pressures, and there are the internal pressures. Now, is that clear enough to be able to see back from where you are, Tom? Can you see it all right? All right. So let's think about some of the external pressures that are brought against us, and I'm just going to give you an opportunity to make a small contribution here, and then, of course, I will share with you what I see. All right. What are some of the external pressures that are brought against our home? I want to see if you're with me, see? I'm not going to give you much time. All right. Okay. Outside activities. We're not talking about the activities within home, the outside activities. Now, mind you, I believe what Elmer is telling us is that even though those activities themselves may be good, there are many things that I might get involved in outside the home. Community projects, school projects, church projects, many projects that I can get involved in, but sometimes too much involvement in outside projects brings pressure on the home. So, though these things may be good, yet they may be used in the wrong sense or they may produce bad results. All right? Others. Okay. Boy, that's good. Job pressures. All right, let's enlarge on that a little bit. How does a job bring pressure on the home?
Both man and wife working.
All right.
They both bring in two separate sets of problems, plus the home problem.
Okay, very good. You see, the husband is under the pressure with his boss. The wife is under pressure at her job, with her boss. And they come home and they bring all their pressures together, and that's where the confrontation takes place, because they're both built up, they're both tense, and you get two tense people together, two people who are about ready to explode, and it doesn't take very much to punch the balloon, does it? You know, my wife doesn't have any problem with me as long as I'm very, very calm. But if I'm very, very tense, then it doesn't take very much for her to cause me to blow my stack or lose my lid or whatever you want to say, because you see, I'm very tense. Now, if both of us are very tense and we're under pressure, then you see how easy it is. As long as I'm very calm and she's under that kind of pressure, well, nothing too much happens, because you see, my calmness has a subduing effect upon her. I can say, "Now, honey, just take it easy, just cool it, you know, just be careful, let's go slow." But if both of us are tense at the same time, wham, sparks fly everywhere. Okay, so job pressures. And if this is a pressure that you feel in your home, mark it down in your little mind or write it down on a piece of paper, because it's something for you to work at. Not something that we're going to improve here. You're not going to have a better home as a result of coming to this class or to Lowell's classes. I know he can handle the subject better than I can, but he's not going to stand up here and improve your home. What you're going to do is to discover where you can improve your home and where you can change the situation for the betterment. And then it's up to you to work on your own problem. And that's what life is all about. Life is discovering where my problem is, how do I cope with it, and so on. Marriage counseling. As I've told you before, I don't marry couples anymore unless I can counsel with them. Got a couple who is coming to me now. We've already had 3 sessions, 2 hours apiece. That's 6 hours. I've got 2 more sessions to go. And all of this before they get married. But you know one of the things that I try to project to them over and over again? Hey, look, we're not settling your problems here. Not in my office. We don't settle your problems. First of all, the biggest problems that you folks have got haven't shown up yet. You may think that they have, but they haven't, because there's new problems that are going to arise once you have started to live together. So we don't solve your problems here. Your problems haven't come yet. We don't need to solve them. But what we're going to do is to understand here in this office that problems are going to arise, and we're going to see if we can't equip you with the ability of knowing how to handle them. You can't handle my problems for me, but you can help me to understand how to handle my problems. And that's what Christian psychology, Bible psychology, is all about, because the Bible is the greatest book on psychology there ever was. Okay, the job. We better hurry on. Any other external pressures that you can think of? Warren? Okay. Very good. I think we all understand that without too much comment. I can't comment on all of these like I'd like to. Any others? Somebody else had one. All right. How do relatives and friends, let's get this down to the nitty-gritty now, how do relatives and friends sometimes bring pressure on my family, on my marriage relationship and our home family life? How? Bob? Okay. All right. It's nice to have relatives and it's nice to have friends, but we don't want to overdo anything, do we? Okay, I think that's the idea. Your relatives and your friends can be a real hindrance to your marriage relationships by not leaving you alone enough to have time in your home with your children and with your wife. All right, any others? Okay, and then sometimes to add to that, we take on the second job. You know, we have one shift for 8 hours, and then we take on the second job, and sometimes the wife does the same thing, all in order to have more. And of course, that brings internal pressures that we'll speak of. All right, let me just give you a little list of some of the things, because some of the things that you've mentioned are some that I have down here. But here's one that we haven't brought to the surface yet. One of the pressures that is brought against our home that causes some of these is advertising. What's the whole philosophy of advertising today? Now, you've got to admit, brother and sister, that advertising has a place in our society, or people wouldn't pay $11,000 for one page in Popular Science. That's what it costs to run one ad on one full page of Popular Science, $11,000. I've got good authority for that. Now, that shows what a tremendous impact, because there's got to be a return on that. Nobody's going to spend $11,000 unless they're going to get $11,000 plus back, right? No point in advertising if you don't. So that shows us what a tremendous impact advertising has in our society. Now, when you think of advertising, radio, television, newspaper, magazines, where's the emphasis? It's full of it, and it can all be summed up in one word, practically, things. And they have brainwashed us with a philosophy that it is things that we need. You can't get along without things. And they've actually got the American public so far brainwashed in this that they think they can't even live without a speedboat today. Or they couldn't possibly exist without a 3-car garage with 2 Cadillacs and a Ford. Hope nobody's got 2 Cadillacs and a Ford here. But you see, things. And so the whole idea of advertising today is you've got to have it. Why do I have to have it? You just can't possibly exist in our society without it. But I can't afford it. You don't have to afford it. We'll take the old car for a down payment. No matter what kind of a piece of junk it is, that's all you need is for a little down payment. And pretty soon, we find out that advertising has taken us right down the lane with it. All right? And then, there's another thing that you will notice about advertising, and that is a strong sex emphasis. You advertise cars, the best way to get the attraction of people is to put a scantily clad girl sitting on the hood. Right? You see, everything, practically everything today is sex-oriented, because that's what everybody... Man, if you want to sell Reader's Digest, just be sure that you include at least one article on some topic of sex. It may be a good topic, but practically every article or every month of Reader's Digest anymore, not everyone, but practically everyone, carries some kind of an article about sex, because that's what people want to read today. So you see, that is a pressure brought upon us. And then there's others. Peer group pressure. Being like other people, accepting the standards that other people set for us. That is a pressure that's brought upon us. Reading material, which I've already kind of touched on. Magazines, paperbacks. You know, you hardly sell a hardback book anymore. Everything has gone to paperbacks. 39, 75, 79, 99 cent paperbacks. And of course, if you look at the drugstore counter bookshelf, you will see what some of the perverted literature is that people are reading, and they're devouring this. And then there's another pressure that is brought upon us externally, and that's inflation. It's one of those things we can't avoid, but it does bring its effect upon us, because everybody says, higher cost, cost us more to live this year than it did last year, don't know how we're going to meet the bills, better take on another job. And so that brings a pressure upon us. And then education has a pressure upon us, because in our colleges and universities today, there's a lot of pressure brought against the home. Howard Hendricks, I believe it was, or maybe it was Henry Brandt, both of them are Christian psychologists. Their daughter called one day from the college and said, "Hey, Dad," and she was all out of breath, and she wanted to tell her dad and her mom that she still loved them and she thought they were the greatest people on the earth. You know why she did it? She had just come out of the professor's class, and he told those young people, he says, "If you were honest, none of you young people have got any respect for your parents or your home." And of course, he dwelt on that. Pressure brought against these young people, getting them to think that we've lost all of our respect for our forefathers, for our parents. They're all a bunch of duds. They're no good. And we need to be very aware of what's happening in the educational field today. And of course, this girl called home to reassure her parents that she wasn't accepting the philosophy that was being presented to her. Now, some of these external pressures produce internal pressures. And what are the internal pressures that are brought against us? Now, maybe you'd like to just contribute a few here. All right. We'll go back where we were a while ago. Someone mentioned materialism. Go back to financial. What happens when a couple overspend themselves and they find themselves in debt? And pretty soon they've got more bills coming in than they possibly know how to cope with. It builds up a pressure within. People become tense. And pretty soon they're at each other because Dad is blaming Mom. "You're spending too much on clothes. You're buying too much jewelry. You're spending too much on little things around the house." And of course, Mom, she retaliates and she says, "Well, you didn't need that CB in your car either." And on it goes, you see. And they begin coming at each other because they have got more accounts coming as pressures upon them than what they're able to handle. And so it becomes a real strain. And then there's another one, and it's time schedules. Boy, don't we have a problem today trying to get everybody at the meal at the same time. Now, that used to be a difficulty when the kids got into college, but it hasn't turned out that way anymore. Today, it's a problem to get the whole family together, even when the kids are small, because one is out playing ball this way, and the other one is out doing something else that way, and some of the activities are wholesome. It's nice to have the kids involved in ball and in sports and different things, but you see, we as parents, we need to see where we can get too involved in that, where we bring pressure upon ourselves and we don't know how to work out our time schedules anymore. I think it is absolutely essential for every home to have times when the whole family is there at least one meal a day. Two is better, three is superb, but at least one meal a day. And that is also a good time for your daily devotions. Okay, so time schedules come in. Then there's personality adjustments. This is one of the areas that we have quite a bit of problem with. We've got two personalities. My wife and I doesn't have the same personality. You and your wife don't have the same personality. And you've got to adjust to each personality because the real truth of it is that opposites attract. Usually you don't find two people with the same personality getting married. Oftentimes you'll have a one personality complex with another personality adjustment over here, and the two are brought together because opposites attract. And so as you bring two personalities together, I did this with a couple that I'm counseling with now. They were here last night. One of the things that we went through was personality. And they had to evaluate themselves. Sure enough, it happens every time. They evaluate themselves differently. At least in my counseling, I've never seen it to fail, and that's not tremendously extensive. But I've never seen it to fail, but what? The husband, after he evaluates himself, or the future husband, says, I'm of the, maybe the melancholy temperament. And she'll say, well, I'm of the other kind of temperament. And there are the four temperaments. And if you want to read about them, pick up one of those books back there and you'll learn more about them. But there are four different temperaments. And oftentimes you'll find that couples are of different temperament because opposites attract. There's a reason for that, which we won't go into. Okay? Failure to assume responsibility brings pressure on us. Husband, he doesn't see his responsibility to help the wife with some of her work around the house. And I don't mind telling you that husbands have a responsibility to help the wife around the house. They expect her to help him with his problems. He has cattle out, or he has problems on the farm, and I'm not just talking to the farmers now. He has trouble keeping up his checkbook, and he expects his wife to help him. Or he is out there working on his car and he needs an extra hand, you know, to hold something up so he can get the bolt in. And who does he call on? Here comes little mama out there and she crawls under the car with him and she helps him. And then he thinks he doesn't have to help her. He thinks it's below his dignity to do anything for her, even wipe a dish. It's scriptural for a man to wipe a dish. The Bible says so because it says a man wipes a dish, turning it upside down. And so if you want to wipe the dish scripturally, you wipe it and then you turn it upside down. But anyway, the important thing is to wipe the dish. And that is a verse found in the Old Testament. I can't tell you where. Okay? What are other responsibilities? Children not learning the responsibilities in the home. One of the most important things to do for kids from the earliest age on is to learn that there are certain responsibilities. Here, sir, is your responsibility. You're the garbage man of the house. And that child knows that he has a responsibility for carrying out the garbage. Or the other one has a responsibility for some other little job about the house or the home. But each one knowing that he's got a particular job that he's expected to do. And it isn't a case of mom and dad constantly saying, Sonny, do this, and saying it 3 to 4 times before it gets done. He just simply knows that he's got a job to do and he learns that responsibility. And responsibility for children comes by parental training. If you want real help in that area, pick up that book back there, Help, I'm a Parent, and you'll get some terrific help in that area of teaching your child how to be a responsible person. Boy, there's a lot of good material back there. And then, of course, another one is misplaced blame. You know how this works? Always blaming somebody else. Never taking the blame for yourself. It's somebody else's fault that you're the way you are, or somebody else's fault that this particular thing happened. And of course, when you get a bunch of kids around, you'll find out that this works quite a bit. Blaming somebody else. Who broke the vase? Not me, but somebody else did it, or else nobody did it, or something. And husbands and wives, you overspent the checkbook. But maybe he'd discover that he's the one who read out the last check and forgot to record it. And all those kind of things, you see, are involved in misplaced blame. I guess you know how it works because I see you all kind of smiling around, like maybe you've had a little experience in this, have you? Have you had a little experience? Well, so have I. And then, of course, there is the big internal problem which brings pressure, and that's feeling a lack of fulfillment. The child doesn't feel fulfilled by his parents. He doesn't feel any sense of self-esteem. The parents don't feel fulfilled in each other. Husbands and wives don't feel fulfilled in each other. They feel a lack of love. There are many a wife who feels like she's lacking for love and respect from her husband. Many a husband feels like he's lacking for love and respect from his wife. There comes in here the sexual fulfillment, feeling that they're unfulfilled sexually, and so lack of fulfillment figures in on that. Now, what is the result? These are just a few of the pressures. What's the result of yielding to these pressures? All right, here's the results of a leading family magazine. A survey was taken in which it was discovered that, and here's some chilling statistics. 75% of the people who were interviewed in this leading magazine said that their homes and their marriages were a failure, or at least they were not happy. Now, that was a cross-section across America, a cross-section of people that were interviewed as to whether they had happy homes. These were not divorced people. These were people who were staying together. These were people who were living together. 75% on the average of the people who are keeping out of the divorce courts, maintaining a home life, father and mother staying together, kids all home, dad and mom living together, and yet 75% of them confessing that they aren't really happy. Now, isn't that a sad thing? Are you happy in your home? Do you feel that your home is a place that, man, I can't wait until this day is done because then I can go home? And if you don't have that kind of an attitude, either for a father or a mother, or a son or a daughter, saying, man, I hate to see the end of this school day come because I have to go home. And he knows when he gets home, he's going to run into a nagging woman, a nagging mother, and he just hates it. He'd rather spend the rest of his life in that schoolroom than he would to go home to his nagging father or mother. And he doesn't like it. And so you would hardly say to a child like that, would hardly say to you, I'm happy. The results of this 75% is, okay, the home is not a happy place, so the family members get involved in other activities. Do you know that sometimes the reason why a husband will take the second or the third job is because he would rather be at work than sit and look at his wife across the table? Because he knows that it's going to be war and sparks flying all the time. He would rather find himself a second job. He may not need the money, but he feels happier at work than he does at home. Same thing works for the wife. Same thing works for the children. Sometimes a husband or a wife will get involved in community projects simply because anything to avoid the home situation. Home is a place to eat and to sleep and to do the minimal of responsibility, but the rest of the time they feel a lot happier if they can be out among their friends. Anytime that you and I feel happier somewhere else than we do at home, we better check. Something is coming apart. Home ought to be a place where we just can't wait to get back to. Home ought to be a place where we would rather be than any other place in the world. And if we have a happy marriage relationship and a happy home life, it'll be that way, and husbands and wives won't stop off for a long time doing other things on their way home. That's where they head, and when they get home, they know there's going to be a happy reception. Don't you just love to come home to have your wife greet you at the door with a big happy smile, and she's got her meal ready and the house is all fixed up, and man, she's got herself all fixed up. She doesn't come to the door looking like she just got out of bed. Because, you see, that brings pressure on you again. Let's just suppose that The last thing that you fellows, we're going to talk about you who work an 8-hour day. The last thing that you see from your wife when you leave for work in the morning is just the way she looked when she climbed out of bed. And that isn't too good, usually. She's a mess. But you get messed up in bed. So, okay, we accept that. All right? So he goes off to work with that image in his mind. But what does he see at work? He's a school teacher, or he works in an office, and he sees all these gals, 8, 10, 15 of them, and man, they're dressed up to the hilt. They've got their makeup on just right. They've got their high heels on or a pressed pair of slacks or whatever, and those gals are all dressed up to meet the public. And he looks at those ladies all day long. Now, he loves his wife, but there's something happening in his mind. He's saying, boy, what a contrast to that gal sitting over across the desk from me from that thing I left this morning. Now, that isn't so bad until he goes home to the same thing. She hasn't even bothered to improve herself during the day. So he's saying to himself, I look at 8 beautiful, well-dressed dolls. I wouldn't want any of them for my wife, but they're sure pretty. And he says, what am I going to look at when I get home? I'm going to find my wife still in her old rags, and maybe with her hair uncurled and no fixing up, and she still looks a mess. And he really doesn't get too interested in coming home after this goes on. Now, this will work for a day or two or a week or two, but if it goes on, I'll tell you what the psychological reaction is in that person's mind. He says, I wish I could see my wife looking as pretty as those gals look. And he gets disappointed, some more disappointment, and pretty soon he gives up. Now, ladies can do a lot to this. Men can do a lot to this by keeping their beards shaved and keeping them, or at least trimmed. Pardon me, I don't mean you have to shave, but keep yourself trimmed, keep your hair looking nice, and wearing nice clothes on your day off. Because you see what is happening here. The fellow who says, this is my day off. I don't work on Saturday, so I'm going to let myself go. I'm going to wear the scruddiest old clothes I can find, and I'm not going to do anything to make myself look nice. You know what he's saying to his wife? The message that she is getting is, you're not worth it. The message that he gets from his wife when she will not fix herself up is, she is saying, I'll dress up when I go out to church. I'll dress up when I go out into society or to my friends. They're worthy of my dressing up. But husband, you're just not worth it. And he gets that feeling, and she gets that feeling, and that's a very bad thing to project. So you see, we want to make our homes so that that's where we want to go, and then we won't find ourselves involved in other projects because we'd rather be home than anywhere else. That is, other unnecessary ones. All right, what is the importance of the home? The importance of the home is emphasized in these cold statistics. The average child spends, and get this, the average child spends 1% of his time in Sunday school and church. 1%. He spends 16% of his time in school. And he spends 83% of his time in the home. Now, do you know what parents are thinking and what they're acting as though they think? They say, I guess I'm not too bad a parent. I send my kid to Sunday school. They don't take him, they send him. And I guess I'm doing everything I can. My child goes to Sunday school. 1% of his time he's in Sunday school, and parents think they've done their job because they sent the kid off to Sunday school. I wish the parents could look at these statistics and think it over again. Do they expect the 1% time spent in Sunday school to offset the 16% of the time that that kid is exposed to all kinds of things in school? And more of his time in social life? No way. This shows us how very important the home is. Columbia University, a few years ago, spent $250,000 in a Gallup poll. And they concluded at the end of their $250,000 Gallup poll that there is no second force in the life of a child compared with the impact of his home. Now, wasn't that something? They spent $250,000 to discover what God has already said long and long ago. No second force in the life of a child, meaning that there is absolutely nothing in all of the world that will replace the value of the home life. No second force. And God has told us that long ago. Another very revealing statistic that came out that I picked up the other day was that in a survey of homes where they have family altar, where there is time for the family to come together to read and to pray and share together. And let me just insert this about this family altar. Perhaps you're saying, I don't understand this family altar. I don't know how to start a family altar. I don't know what to do with a family altar. Okay, we can't talk about it now, but somewhere along this month, we hope you get help. If you don't, come for it, because I will give you some literature and I will give you some helpful advice as to how to set up a family altar that the children will enjoy, that you and your wife will enjoy, not a boresome one. I think back, I might have bored our kids many times with our family altars because I didn't know how to do it any different. You know, I did it the way Dad and Mom always did it. So I lived through some of the boredom of the family altar, and then I expect my kids to live through some of the boredom of the family altar. Family altars do not have to be boredom. And so there is a way to do it that keeps the interest up. But anyway, back to our statistic. Here, they discovered that there was one divorce. Listen to this. One divorce in 1,015 homes where there was family altar. Now, you know what the divorce rate in the world today generally is? 1 out of 3. Every 1 out of 3 homes are flying apart today in the world, including the Christian world. But in the homes where there was family altar, family devotion, where mom and dad read and prayed, and the kids were included in it, 1 out of 1,015 divorces. And if that doesn't say something for the family altar, and you know who leads the family altar? It's dad. That is your responsibility, to lead the family altar. Your wife cooperates, but you're the leader. You're the provider in the home. And it is your responsibility, and we can't expect any good things if we don't allow for, you know, things that statistics do prove. Now then, the last thing that we were going to talk about but won't, and that is the influence of the home. We were going to talk about goals, and then we were going to talk about standards. And I don't get to talk very much anymore because Brother Lowell is going to be doing it from now on, so I don't know when I'm going to get this in or if I get it in, but goals. You think about them. What are the goals that you want for your children? And then, when you have established your goals, then you need to set up some standards to reach those goals. And that's the way you get a happy home. So the last thing that I'll say in closing this morning is that happy homes, wholesome homes, good disciplined homes, happy marriage relationships don't come automatic. Please remember that. These things do not come automatic. Happy homes, well-adjusted homes are planned. They have to be planned, and then you work out your plan. First you have to work a plan, and then you have to work your plan out. And that's the only way that it works. Shall we pray? Father, we give Thee thanks for the tremendous impact that You have made in Your Word on the home. And we know, Lord, that many of us have failed in many ways, and yet there is so much wealth of knowledge for us if we'll just sit down and examine it and see how we can improve, Lord. And so we know that principles of Your Word need to be applied and can and will be applied by honest people. God bless us now as we separate until we meet the next time. In Jesus' name, amen.